Jonas.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Yes, they are who we thought they were. I am Jay Soderberg, a.k.a. Pod Vader, here once again on a lovely Saturday morning. It is March 21st, 2015, the second day of spring. And gentlemen, I am looking at another snowstorm going on here in the state of Connecticut. It's fun. It's fun. Great. I am joined today by four of our super fans. Brian Robinson of the Cowboys. What's happening in Dallas, Brian?
What's going on, Jay? America's team is in the house, ready to chop it up with you.
That sounds fantastic. I can't wait. Hopefully it's not snowing in Dallas. Because we know what happens when there's snow in Dallas. People lose their seats at the Super Bowl.
Absolutely nothing.
I know where it's not snowing. That's New Orleans. Chase, I'm going to mispronounce your name, buddy.
Mollett.
Mollett. Chase Mollett. Yes, sir. What's happening?
Sitting on my back porch on this beautiful, gloomy morning, and believe it or not, the sky is not falling in Houdat Nation.
We're going to get into that. Down representing the Jacksonville Jaguars, we've got Ryan Mercier. Ryan, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on? You know, Maurice Jones-Drew called the Jaguars America's team once. I'm just going to throw that out there.
He was wrong. He was dead wrong. And how did this guy weasel his way into the second show? Representing that team in New York, they wear green. Andrew Hirsch, how are you?
I'm good, Jay. Nice to be here. Seeing snow in my backyard, too. So we got something we could agree on that this winter needs to end.
I think we're going to agree on a lot of things, unfortunately, but we will certainly get into all of that. We'll talk about those four teams. We're going to have a little draft conversation in today's program as well. To get in touch with us, Gmail. That's our email address, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also touch base with us on Facebook. A lot of our super fans have already put up their off-season previews of each of their teams. Any of you guys? I know, Chase, I've seen the Saints preview. How about the rest of you guys? You on Facebook?
Yeah, yeah. Jaguars preview's right up there for everybody.
Cowboys preview is fresh off the presses.
So is the Jets.
Nice. So go to our Facebook page. That's Next Fan Up. Or facebook.com/NFU podcast and check out, see if your favorite team's preview has already been up by the super fan. And you can reach us on Twitter at NFU podcast. We'll be chatting it up there as well. And as always, you can catch the show here on blogtalkradio.com/NextFanUp. Gentlemen, here's some big news. We are on iTunes.
Oh,
yes.
So go and subscribe. Go and subscribe on iTunes. Leave a review. And please don't take all of your hatred out on the super fans if it's me that you really hate. Just, you know. So that's all I ask. That's all I ask.
We've got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
See, no, that's exactly the sort of thing that we don't need around here. let's start with Brian in Cowboys Nation. You know, one of the biggest free agents so far in this free agency period has been that of Greg Hardy, and it certainly ruffled a lot of feathers, both positively and negatively there in Texas Nation. Brian, what's happening there with Greg Hardy?
Well, certainly there's been a lot of backlash on the Greg Hardy signing. The Dallas mayor has chimed in with his two cents, and they were quite negative. One of the biggest local sportscasters here also went on a tirade against the Cowboys for signing Greg Hardy. I think as fans, we do a very good job of compartmentalizing our fandom. I think everyone would agree that Greg Hardy's actions were despicable. we don't even know all the details, but we know enough to know he did a deplorable act. Putting your hands on a woman is something that no man should ever do. We can all agree on that. Now, that being said, fans are very good at separating one man's actions from the benefits of the team. Greg Hardy is a fantastic signing for the Dallas Cowboys for what they need. And he comes on a very team-friendly contract. They got him for 1 year. The base salary is small, and it's going to be per game that they pay him with some incentives. And then it could be up to $13 million. If he ends up making that $13 million, he's going to have earned every cent. We needed a pass rusher. We needed somebody dynamic on our defensive line to put pressure on the quarterback. In Hardy's last full season, he had 15 sacks. We didn't have 15 sacks from our defensive line all of last year. He fills a gigantic need, and he will help every level of our defense so we can start getting pressure on the quarterback. Now, we're facing a possible six-game suspension, and considering the climate of the NFL with the Ray Rice situation, I'm fully expecting that six-game suspension to be handed down very soon once they can get all the information to the NFL that they're looking for. But having Greg Hardy, having someone that caliber that we didn't have last year, that we haven't had since DeMarcus Ware has left, changes our defense and now allows us to kind of follow our draft board a little closer when we get to draft day. It's one of the best signings that Dallas has made in recent times, and I think it closes the door on Adrian Peterson as well, which I am completely fine with.
So there's no doubt from a football-only perspective, Greg Hardy is a perfect match for the Dallas Cowboys. He fits every need that the Dallas Cowboys needed on defense. The question, of course, is the off-the-field issues. And you already have a guy on that team who's apparently dealing with a lot of off-the-field issues and is also looking for a big-time contract and could arguably be even more important to the success of the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm talking about Dez Bryant. What are your feelings here about what this means for Dez Bryant moving forward?
I honestly don't think the Hardy signing will impact Dez Bryant going forward. I think Greg Hardy will be nothing more than a one-year rental, much like Darrell Revis was for your Patriots last year. I think Hardy is either going to hit it big and cash in next year with another team on a huge 4 or 5 year deal, or the problems and the headaches are just going to compound and the Cowboys are going to get rid of him after this year. Said they went for the experiment and it just didn't work out. There's no way that Greg Hardy is going to be back in Dallas next year as we stand now. For Dez Bryant, I think he's going to play this year under the franchise tag. I don't think they're going to get a long-term deal worked out this year. And I'm okay with that because it's kind of been proven that the big money wide receivers aren't necessary for team success. You look at the teams in the Super Bowl last year, there were no elite wide receivers for Seattle or New England. And the guys that have gotten those big contracts, Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, they haven't paid off in team success. So I think the Cowboys are being very patient with their money. I think they're going to play this year out on the franchise tag and then go back to the negotiating table next year with Dez. I know he hates it, but I know he understands it's a business. And he's going to play his tail off the way he always does, and the results are going to be there. And I think they're going to eventually come to a long-term deal, one that's still very team-friendly. Dez is an integral part of this offense, and certainly the window for the Cowboys is right now. So I would imagine that he's going to play his butt off this year so that he puts even more pressure on the Cowboys to force them to sign that long-term deal.
First of all, Julian Edelman just called. He's still looking for respect. Second of all,
he ain't gonna find it for me.
Second of all, the egos and the personalities on that team. Who is your veteran leadership? Who's going to help keep all these guys in line? I met Greg Hardy when I had when I was working back at that Four Letter Network. He is a very interesting dude, and I'll leave it at that. He's just an interesting dude. And you've got him, you've got Dez, you have a coach that sort of, I mean, from the outside looking in, doesn't look like he's the man with, you know, a lot of power. You have a, you have an owner who likes to think of himself as a GM. And of course, he's got a huge personality. You have a quarterback who, again, outside looking in, looks like he just doesn't want to deal with any of that stuff. He just wants to go out and ball and then go out and have a good time. I mean, who is sort of your veteran leadership here to keep all these egos in line?
See, I'm going to disagree with you on that last point about Tony Romo. I love me some Tony Romo. I would extend him to the end of the earth. I think the last couple of years we've seen the maturation process of Tony Romo. He no longer wears the backwards hat on the sideline. He's got the hat going forward, and that's, I don't know why that's a big thing, but that's a big thing in showing how professional you are. Just ask Matt Stafford. So I think Romo and Witten are the heartbeat, are the soul of that team, and they are going to be the ones that keep this group in line. You're right. There are a lot of personalities. Rolando McClain on that defense, should they bring him back, and I think they will. There's a lot to keep in line here in the circus that is the Dallas Cowboys. But I think they showed last year with the team success, with being, you know, winning the division, getting back to the playoffs, 12 wins. Everyone's on board when you're winning. And they built this team in such a way that they can continue winning. I never thought I'd say this about Jerry Jones and the Jones family, but they've exercised a little fiscal responsibility as of late. And they're not trying to win the offseason, such as, you know, the Redskins and Eagles have in years past. So I think they're going to be able to keep these guys in line as long as they're winning.
Guys, Brian just dropped the first drop, I think, on this program that I've heard, and that is, you are showing maturity when you wear your hat forward and not backwards. I love it. I love it. Chase, what's Drew Brees doing with his cap? Is it forward or backwards?
As long as he's got one, the one with a fleur-de-lis on it, I'm happy.
Well, he seems to be about the only veteran left with a fleur-de-lis. I mean, my son and I are still reeling about the surprise of free agency, and that's the trading of Jimmy Graham. What is going on in New Orleans?
Well, I think, first of all, like I said in the beginning drop, I don't think the sky's falling. And when you look at each of these moves the Saints have been making piece by piece, it looks like we're in full-on fire sale mode. But the more I'm looking at all the deals as a whole, the more I'm actually liking what they're doing. Jimmy Graham, the best tight end in the NFL as far as I'm concerned. I'm maybe biased. I'm maybe a little bit biased. But you can't say that he's not up there in the top two. And the thing I like more about him than your boy Gronk is that at least Graham's on the field through injuries. He may be ineffective, but he's the best decoy you could ask for in the league. I think his problem starts back last year when we were going through all the arbitration over the tight end wide receiver. I think his relationship with the front office was strained severely. And I think you could see that as the season wore on. I mean, you had the preseason dunking over the crossbars. Peyton didn't seem to like that very much. Seemed to be Jimmy Graham was kind of trying to make a point that he's going to do what he wants to do. As the season wore on last year, though, Graham's production seriously tailed off. And even as a decoy, it wasn't worth having him on the field sometimes, especially with his lack of blocking.
Well, let me defend Jimmy Graham a little bit here. Who else is catching the ball? You have no wide receivers on your team, and arguably one of the guys who had the most potential in Kenny Stills is now gone.
I agree. The thing with Drew Brees, he tends to make receivers around him better. I mean, the last few years, he's made superstars out of guys like Marcus Colston, who was a late seventh-round pick. Lance Moore, undrafted free agent. I mean, he's made guys like Joe Horn in his later years, your boy David Patton, Devery Henderson. He's made guys like that look good. We had some of our best passing years statistically with tight ends like Eric Johnson, Billy Miller, Jeremy Shockey, Dave Thomas. Drew Brees has shown that he can produce without a top-flight receiver. And we have some young guys on the roster that no one knows about outside of New Orleans, but we're really excited about them. And
tell me about them, because I need to know. I need to know who you got on that roster right now. What's your depth chart looking like?
All right, we got Cole Smith at the top. He's getting up there in years, but best receiver in franchise history. And in one of his worst years, he still almost managed to put up 1,000 yards receiving. Behind him, we have Nick Toon, second-generation NFL star. Started coming on at the end of last year. Has the size comparable to Colston. We had two guys on the practice squad that got a little bit of play time late in the year, and Shontavious Jones, who is a undrafted free agent out of Valdosta State, and Brandon Coleman, also undrafted from Rutgers. And these are two guys who are 6'5" plus and run in the 4'5" range. So they have size comparable to Jimmy Graham. Coleman has a little bit of trouble with drops, but toward the end of the year when he got a chance to shine, he looked good. We have a local favorite. The fans have been clamoring for him to make the roster for years now, and Andy Tanner. He's in the Wes Welker, Julian Edelman mode. And anytime you've ever seen this cat get on the field, he does not drop anything thrown his way. He's not the biggest. He's not the fastest. But he has the biggest heart that I've seen. And once again, Saints fans are clamoring for him to get his shot. Behind him, I really think that receiver is going to be picked earlier than a lot of people think. Maybe not first round with the depth that we have, but I could see a guy like Dorial Green-Beckham. I would love to have him in the second round because I think Sean Payton and Drew Brees could keep him in line.
Green-Beckham's not making it to the second round.
Well, I mean, they do have depth in this draft at receiver, and
I gotta tell you, Chase, I'm not buying what you're selling on your wide receiver depth.
That's fine, Pod. A lot of people around here aren't. I think the Saints are trying to move to a more run-heavy offense, like we had in our earlier years. Drew Brees works better out of play action than all but maybe two or three quarterbacks in the league. And the last few years, with the lack of the running production, we haven't been able to do that. And that's why you've seen the big plays that the Saints were once famous for drop off a cliff. Last year, our run blocking offensive line was the 11th best in the league as graded by Pro Football Focus. We had the 20th in pass blocking. And the Saints' offense is dictated on our interior offensive line, giving Drew Brees time in the pocket to climb up, go through his progressions, and find the open man. And last year, there were way too many times where Drew Brees was rushed and threw the ball away to his security blanket in Graham. And defenses started keying on that around midseason. And when Graham's injury happened and he wasn't able to go up and fight for the ball like normal, that's when you see a lot of Drew Brees' interceptions start coming. And that's why I'm kind of in favor of the Graham move, because you're killing two birds with one stone, in my opinion. You're solidifying the interior line with Unger, who is one of the – when he's on the field, he does have an injury history. When he is on the field, he is one of the best run-blocking centers in the league. And that's something we haven't had in a while. Jonathan Goodwin was good, but he's been long past his prime. And Tim Lelito didn't fill in very well for him during injury. I think Tim Lelito is first up to take Ben Grubbs' spot. He's a much better guard, in my opinion, than center. And with the interior line and the re-signing of Ingram and the signing of C.J. Spiller, who I think could be the best satellite back that we've had in Sean Payton's tenure in New Orleans.
Whoa! Better than Darren Sproles?
Ooh. I think he's better than Darren Sproles, Todd. He's got the size to run up in between the tackles. I think you're going to see a completely different C.J. Spiller than you've seen in recent years, and you're familiar with him, coming from the Bills. In 2012, when he put up his best season, Chan Gailey was his offensive coordinator and used him in a similar way that Peyton's going to use him, I think. He's going to look for the mismatches. He's going to move him to the slot. He's going to move him out wide. He's going to make the defense have to game plan around him. I don't think he had that the last couple of years with the Bills. And you can't take a guy like him and line him up and have him running through eight-man boxes every play. And that was something that he said in his press conference that he had to introduce him to the New Orleans media. One of the first things out of his mouth was, it's going to be great to not have to run through eight-man boxes. And that's something he is never going to see in New Orleans.
I think you've got some problems on your defense too. One team that I know doesn't have problems on their defense, at least I don't think they've got that many problems now on their defense, is unfortunately wearing the stupid green. Andrew, your off season and your Jets, I mean, your team has completely transformed their identity, at least on defense. The question for the Jets, I think, moving forward is, what are they going to do on offense?
Well, that's been the question for the greater part of 6-7 years with this team, that they're ever since Rex Ryan came, the defense has been at least top 10, and it looks like they can make a return to that this year. I think when you look at the Jets on defense right now, their biggest hole is an outside pass rusher, and that's something the Jets could hopefully solidify with the 6th overall pick if Marcus Mariota's not on the board, but that's a different issue. I think if you look at the Jets offseason, it's very hard not to like what they did, but if you look at it in context, this is something that should have been done last offseason. Darrelle Revis was available last offseason. Antonio Cromartie was available last offseason. The Jets had $40 million in cap space. It's just that the former GM, John Idzik, didn't want to spend the money, or at least that's what the reports say. But as I was saying before, Revis was available last offseason, and we all know Rex Ryan loves Darrelle Revis, so he definitely wanted him. And the reports were that Idzik didn't want him, but I'd have to call BS on that. Because if you're John Idzik, you gave up Darrelle Revis and you got a first-round pick back, and if you could get him back a year later, you look like a genius. Why wouldn't you do that? The only reason you wouldn't do that is if your owner doesn't want you to do that, the guy who signs your checks, the guy who decides if you're going to stay or go. So it's just the most Jets thing in the world to have your probably the best player in franchise history go to your number one rival and win a Super Bowl, and then come back the next year and sign a gigantic contract.
And hello, you play to win the game.
Well, apparently Darrelle Revis plays to win the game and then plays for his bank account, because that he came out and said, oh, he never wanted to leave. I'm so happy to be back. I mean, I'm not going to blame the guy. But like, we all know what you're about, man, and it's totally fine. I'm gonna enjoy watching you the rest of your career, hopefully in green. But we know what the reason was that you left the team.
And so here's the question I have on Revis. Okay, so we know that Revis is a mercenary. All right, he's out there. He's trying to get the biggest bang for his buck. He is probably, and I saw this tweeted by someone, and I believe it was my good friend Ross Tucker there, that Darrelle Revis has proven to be the best free agent in the history of free agency. So he has done – we have not seen any other free agent in the history of free agency do what Darrelle Revis has been able to do in terms of getting a contract, getting paid, getting the money. The question I have now with Revis, now that he has that ring, does he decide he needs to continue to play at the level that he's played, or is he now fat and happy?
No, I think these athletes have too much professional pride, especially someone like Revis, who wants to go down as one of the best players at his position of all time. And I honestly do believe he does want to bring a title to New York, the team that drafted him. And I mean, I think it's pretty far off unless they get someone at the quarterback position. But they're definitely a lot closer than they were a couple of months ago. they've addressed the two most glaring needs on their team, be it in the secondary with the signings of Revis, Cromartie, and Buster Skrine, and the trade of Brandon Marshall to get a guy to be able to push Eric Decker down to the number two wide receiver slot, and to give whoever's throwing you the football another option just to throw the ball up, like in situations. You've seen Jay Cutler do it the past couple of years. Oh, look, I'm just throw it off to Brandon Marshall, hope he makes a play. Just to have that outlet there is a very key thing for a young quarterback to have, which is hopefully what we're going to have, a guy like Mariota, or maybe, God forbid, even Geno Smith. But the team just looks a lot more solid on paper than it did last year.
You don't think it's going to be the beard throwing the football?
I honestly, I wouldn't be too surprised if it was, because the only guy I see out there right now that would start if Fitzpatrick doesn't is Mariota, and who knows if he's going to be there at six. I wouldn't trade up if I were the Jets to get Mariota, but if he was sitting there at six, I would take him in a heartbeat. The thing is that there are reports coming out now that the Jets wouldn't take Mariota if he's there at six, which I can't imagine. I know the draft's in Chicago this year, but if that happened, I promise you, you'd be able to hear the Jet fans all the way from New York over there, because if they don't take him, there's going to be big issues there.
So we'll get back to the draft in just a moment. We'll get into that. We're going to have a little conversation about Jameis Winston versus Mariota. But we do have one other super fan whom we haven't heard from since the top of the show. Ryan, sitting there with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, you guys have sort of quietly put together a nice little offseason here in free agency. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And yes, I'm still here, just so you know. Real quick, I want to point out that it never mattered how Blaine Gabbert wore his hat. You know, backwards, forwards, on his feet, on his, it just didn't matter. The day that I worry about Blake Bortles and how he wears his hat, I'm going to be a happy man. All right. So the free agent class was outstanding to me, but even the GM, Dave Caldwell, called it, you know, the reporters said, you know, you really hit a home run or phrased the question to him. And he said, it was more like a double. Because he was really looking at getting Randall Cobb and your guy, Pod, who I really, really wanted in Devin McCourty. But, of course, he went back to the champs. So the guys who are actually on the team, the most exciting one that hopefully everybody knows about at this point is tight end Julius Thomas, who I believe is the third best tight end in the league, obviously behind your guy, Gronk. And our ex-Saints guy, Jimmy Graham. I always saw this guy as he was a guy who went out there and caught double-digit touchdowns, and I always felt like he didn't even know what he was doing. Like, he's just a young guy who doesn't, you know, he doesn't know all the nuances of football yet, and he still gets out there and goes and gets a lot of production. And that's just going to be a great addition for Blake Bortles, who last year – just had so many rookies and young guys on this offense, and Thomas is young, but now he has a lot of experience, and he's just going to add a safety net or a guy in the red zone as well. We also got on the line Jared Odrick from the Dolphins. It was a really nice signing. He's not going to be a star like an Ndamukong Suh or J.J. Watt or something like that, but he just adds a lot of depth to really the strength of the team of the Jaguars, which is the defensive line. And we actually let Red Bryant from the Seahawks. He was with us for 1 year, but we let him go because we got him. And with a few other additions as well. But Thomas is certainly the jewel of all of them. And I'm very excited about him.
So, you know, what is the plan now moving forward with Jacksonville? They lost out on Devin McCourty. My heart is broken for you.
Thank you.
What do you think the Jaguars' plans are now moving into the draft phase of things here with building the team in the offseason?
Okay, well, yeah, that's a good question. You know, there are a few guys that I did leave out of that draft class. Just we actually signed Sergio Brown from the Colts, who you may remember as the guy that Gronk just pushed way out of the end zone on some run play against the Colts. He just tore him up and threw him out and got penalized. Yeah, so we got that guy now as free safety, which honestly, and in my write-up, which, you know, is on the Facebook page, I put that as our biggest need, even over tight end, because the guys we had playing there, like if we had any one of us playing, I feel like it would have been better last year. So I don't really know. I don't really know too much about Sergio Brown, but from what I hear, he's going to be an upgrade. So we have that free safety. We also got Devon House from the Green Bay Packers, who, you know, he might have been the third or fourth guy down the depth chart, but I really like a lot of the defensive backs that they have in Green Bay, and I'm pretty excited about him. He may even start. So as far as the draft goes, at number three overall, I mean, it almost seems set in stone, which is a really tough thing to say with Dave Caldwell, because nobody thought he was going to take Blake Bortles last year at number three. I know I didn't, but seems pretty set in stone that we're going to go pass rusher there. And the thought is that Leonard Williams will go number two to the Titans, although you never know with another quarterback there. So if Leonard Williams falls to number three, which doesn't seem that likely but possible, I do think they would take him because he seems like the best player in the draft. But beyond that, they would go pass rusher. At least that's my expectation. And it really looks like Dante Fowler would be the top guy from Florida, which scares some Jaguars fans like me because we took a defensive end from Florida in 2008 named Derek Harvey and actually traded up for him. And he did not pan out, let's just say. But it seems like Fowler would be a better player. And there are a bunch of other pass rushers, but looking at everybody and Shane Ray and Vic Beasley and all these guys, I do think I like Fowler the most. And I think they may go running back in round two because the running game was a pretty big problem last year.
Well, it's interesting you bring up running backs because Andrew brought up this concept with us before we started the show about two standout running backs available in the first round. But we've seen this move now in the NFL where the running back position has really become devalued. I mean, the Patriots just won a Super Bowl without having a different running back lead the team in rushing each month of the NFL season. So, or lead their team in rushing, I should say, each month of the NFL season. They've shown that a running back by committee can still win a Super Bowl. So the question is, are we even going to see a running back drafted in the first round? I know, Andrew, you've got some strong thoughts on that.
Right. I think we're definitely going to see one running back taken in the first round. Between the two guys on the top of the draft right now are Todd Gurley, the guy from Georgia. If he didn't tear his ACL, I think he'd be a top five player on the big board, on most analyst big boards. The guy is the best running back prospect since, I'd probably say Adrian Peterson, but that's what people said about Trent Richardson, so that's a dangerous thing to say. And then you got Melvin Gordon from Wisconsin. I just think the teams, it's such a market inefficiency now. It's a glaring market inefficiency that for teams later in the first round, if you're a team like Dallas or you're a team like New England, you have a late first-round pick, why wouldn't you take the 10th best player on the board, even if he is playing running back? He could make such an impact on your team that taking him at a spot like the 27th pick just makes too much sense in my mind. I mean, as I know Ryan just said that he thinks the Jaguars are going to go running back early in the second round. I think the Jets should go to running back early in the second round. So I hope one of those guys fall. But if there was a gun to my head right now, I think the teams at the end of the first round who are generally smarter than the teams at the beginning of the first round because they win, I think they're going to see that taking those guys are going to be more beneficial to their team than taking some linebacker who might not pan out. And I just think it makes more sense for them to take a stud running back like Gurley or Gordon at that spot than it does to take someone at a different position.
now that we've got so much of this running back by committee, and that's really the wave of the future, we're not seeing running backs getting 20 carries a game. That's getting phased out. The value of a running back by nature diminishes for those top guys. And for those later round guys, it rises because you know you're going to see them on the field. The Cowboys are sitting at 27, and I'm praying that they don't go running back in the first round. I don't imagine Gurley will be on the board. I do think Melvin Gordon will be sitting there, and I don't want them to take him. I think they have more pressing needs. I'd rather them wait. I think they can get a guy like Tevin Coleman out of Indiana, maybe a Jay Ajayi out of Boise State, pair them with McFadden, Randall, and by committee, they'll have all they need in the backfield. They don't need one guy to be that workhorse back. Everyone says we're looking for the replacement for DeMarco Murray. We're going to find the replacement, but we're going to find it in bits and pieces. And one of those bits and pieces does not need to come at the 27th pick.
Right. And when it comes to Dallas, I think I don't know if Dallas is going to take a running back, because I think the running game is more predicated on that dominant offensive line than it is on the running back itself. So they could take a guy in the fourth round and he could still be productive. But I agree with you. I would take Gurley. I'm not sure if I would take Gordon if I was Dallas, but it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to take a stud running back like that.
Honestly, with the Patriots running back situation, I'm not very concerned about it at this point. I do like LeGarrette Blount as sort of the big, you know, workhorse back. I do like Jonas Gray as sort of the up and comer. And James White, there's been a lot of things said about James White that are in the positive as sort of a pass catcher. Although that's the one area with the Patriots that I'm concerned about with losing Shane Vereen is they don't have that Kevin Faulks, Shane Vereen type guy, at least proven on the team right now. James White is said to be that guy. I don't know. We kind of have to wait and see. I do not want to see the Patriots taking a running back in the first round. I think they've got much more pressing needs, especially in the secondary. Listen, Mike Reese is probably my favorite guy in the world when it comes to Patriots reporters. I think he is the most tuned in guy when it comes to the New England Patriots. But I saw him actually post a depth chart of the Patriots secondary, and he put Super Bowl hero Malcolm Butler as the number one corner in that depth chart. If we start the season with Malcolm Butler as the number one cornerback, I will tell you right now, the Patriots are not making the playoffs. It's that simple. Like, well, Malcolm Butler is not a number one corner on any team. Never mind the New England Patriots.
Not right. Making the playoffs. So my goodness, I don't think he's playing quarterback. Come on,
playoffs.
The thing with the Patriots in the cornerback position is that, as good as Bill Belichick does at drafting players, he's not known for drafting cornerbacks very well. So free agency is basically done when it comes to that position. So I don't see what you guys are going to be able to do to shore up that position for next year. I mean, what it looks like the Patriots are doing is that they're going to try to supplement that with a better pass rush with the signing of Jabal Sheard and maybe even some other guys in the draft. But as of now, I was having this conversation with a friend. If you just take the quarterback position out of it, like, I mean, I know you can't do that in real life, but you just take quarterback position out of it and you look at the four teams in the AFC East and just look at their rosters, you could make a legitimate argument that the Patriots have the worst roster outside of quarterback in that division. So, I mean, I think it's pretty, like, fanatical for Pods to say that they're not going to make the playoffs, but I don't think that, like, it's completely nuts.
Trust me, it's truly on the defensive side of the ball that I have most of my concerns. The Patriots went out and they rented Revis and Browner, and Browner didn't even turn out to be that much of an investment. I mean, yes, he certainly was a help over there, but he was the most penalized guy on the team. So enjoy that, Chase.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that to us, Todd. We needed more defensive penalties.
but you know, in terms of the corners, I do see some upside with Logan Ryan. I do see a little bit of upside for Malcolm Butler, but I don't see Malcolm Butler as the number one. You know, they went and got Bradley Fletcher from the Eagles. Yippee. You can see I'm doing somersaults over that signing. The one interesting thing I did see, my boy Mike Reese, and he salvages himself just a little, is the concept of moving Devin McCourty back to corner, which is where he started. And then now you're looking at maybe filling in that safety position with a guy from the draft early on. That might be a little bit more palatable. We'll have to wait and see what the Patriots do.
Well, I wonder how palatable that is, though, because it's supposed to be a pretty thin draft class for safety, though. That almost seems kind of dangerous to move him back. But, I mean, you never know with Wiley, kooky old Belichick, he might have it all planned out. But that seems kind of scary to me, actually.
Well, the thought is that Daron Harmon definitely has shown some potential in the safety position. And I think, too, you have a bunch of these corners. Logan Ryan would be one of them. Guys that can definitely flip back and play that free safety position. I think there's some interesting things that they can do with the pieces that they have on the team already. A lot is going to depend, though. I mean, the other thing is that they didn't find a Vince Wilfork replacement yet. I mean, Alan Branch had a great year last year, but that was playing next to Wilfork. Now that Branch has got to be the Wilfork, I'm slightly concerned in that aspect as well. But let's not make this Patriots today. It's all about the super fans. And since we are talking about the draft, you know, the most important position in the draft is going to be quarterback. And you know, it seems like it's already set in stone that the Buccaneers are going with Jameis Winston. We had sort of an email conversation, the super fans and I, about this Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota battle going on. And to me, Jameis Winston has bust written all over him, and Marcus Mariota has the most potential. Now, listen, Dickie V is the guy who said it. He said this many, many times in his college basketball, but it fits here too. Potential gets you fired, you know, 9 times out of 10. But to me, Marcus Mariota, if I'm the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'd rather start my season with a guy that I know I can trust, who's an on-field leader, who has shown success at the level of the game that he was playing, and you know, making him the cornerstone of what I'm going to build upon. Jameis Winston, you know, it's going to take one trip to the club and it's over. And now you've set your franchise back even a few more years, and you weren't supposed to be set back at all anyway when Lovie Smith came in the first place.
And now imagine you're Lovie Smith or the GM or the owner, and that's exactly what you're thinking about probably every waking second of your life until the draft. I don't know if I'll be the only one, and maybe not, because that's a pretty strong take on Jameis Winston. But I know for me there's no question about it. I would rather have Jameis Winston under center. I don't watch a lot of college football. It's not my favorite sport. I have a lot of problems with it. But just hearing everything about him, and I made sure to watch the Oregon-Florida State game. And even though Jameis Winston lost, you know, his team lost 100-0 or whatever that score was, I thought it was just so clear how much more he looks like an NFL quarterback than Mariota right now. And he just looks like, you know, he can make the NFL throws. He can move around in the pocket just enough and get things done. And to me, he looks like a number one pick. And of course, this is just really tough after looking at last year and the Browns taking Johnny Manziel, who had off the field problems. And obviously that did not go well at all. And right now he's in rehab trying to get better. And you hope if you draft him, Winston doesn't get into that situation. But for me, just bottom line, looking at quarterback play, I think I would go with Jameis.
Well, as a Jets fan, I think I'm the only fan represented here that has a need a quarterback at this point. And just thinking about what Jameis Winston would do in New York City just like gives me like the chills. So I'd rather go Mariota if he was there. But I agree that if when you just look at the on-field play, it's abundantly clear that Winston had to carry a lot more on his shoulders than what Mariota did. That he had to make those throws into tight windows a lot more often than what Mariota had to do at Oregon. But for a guy, as Jay was saying, you want a guy who's an on-field leader who you don't have to worry about off the field, who you know is going to spend all the time in the film room trying to get better. And I think the Jets can't. I don't think the Jets could afford to take a guy like Winston there. And if Mariota is there at six, as I said before, I think the Jets have to take him. They just absolutely have to take him. Get a new face of the franchise. Give the fans some hope. And if they don't, as I said, there's gonna be a lot of problems, because I don't see Geno Smith as the answer. And as much as I like Ryan Fitzpatrick, I think was the best available veteran quarterback on the market this offseason, considering that he's only making $3 million a year, and while Josh McCown's making like $6 million guaranteed. But if Mariota's there, you have to take him, because you're not winning with Geno Smith or Ryan Fitzpatrick.
The question with Fitzpatrick really is, you know, why has he been on so many teams? You know, the dude's from Harvard. He's clearly very smart, but he clearly is rubbing teams the wrong way. I mean, we've seen Fitzpatrick on the field. He does have a certain level of success.
Right.
You know, we can't take that away from Ryan Fitzpatrick. The problem that I see is that he's not making, you know, he's not solidifying himself with any team. And I don't know if that's Fitzpatrick or the teams that he's been on.
I don't think it's Fitzpatrick. I just think, like, he's like your typical guy who you want there just for a year or two to bridge to the next guy. You know you're not winning anything with him, but you also know that he gives you he's not going to kill you at that position. You look at it the other way. Why do so many teams want him? So many teams want him because they know what he is, and that he could mentor a young quarterback like a Mariota. So I think that Fitzpatrick is in a good spot this year. He's got the guys to throw the ball to, and if they don't pick a quarterback, he'll probably start the majority of the games, and he'll probably be in another team next year, and then we'll be having the same conversation.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick played for in my division twice, on the Texans and the Titans, and I think what you said is right, but I would disagree. I would say it also is Fitzpatrick, because He's a turnover machine, and he's right. Just like he's a crazy, basically you don't know what you're gonna get, and I've seen plenty of games where he can be both in the same game the reason that you're gonna lose the game and that you're gonna win the game. So he is a guy who's capable of winning NFL games, and he is a pretty good quarterback, but the turnovers are just weird, and I would say, you know, going back just put in a Jaguars parallel here for the Jets situation, is that when Chad Henne was there with Blaine Gabbert, like when that I know that makes everyone want to throw up. It makes me want to throw up too. But I always was just constantly rooting for Gabbert to win the job.
They
because
are who
that
we thought they were. We got them on the hook.
Yes, they were. I was just constantly rooting for Gabbert.
By the way, that was the wrong drop. I was
we're
trying
not
to
a
hit
very good
spot.
Football team right now, obviously.
Well, whatever you use, it's probably appropriate for the Henny and Gabbert show. Anyway, I just want to say that I was rooting for Gabbert to win the position, because that means he's a young guy on the rise. So for the Jets, I don't know about you, and maybe it's long gone, but I would be rooting for Geno or Marcus Mariota if you get him to start.
Well,
As a team that's quickly becoming the trendy pick to trade up in the first round to take a quarterback to replace Breeze, which I don't think is very likely, to be frank, the question of Mariota over Winston, I think Winston would fit in much better with what Peyton likes to do now, with having the quarterback sit back in the pocket, look at his progressions, throw to the open man. I think as of this moment, Winston is by far the most likely to be able to step in and do that immediately. Does that mean that I want to be responsible for him walking around Bourbon Street at 3 a.m. on a Saturday night? Absolutely not. And that's the problem with the NFL the way it is right now, is there's no more one strike, two strike, slap on the wrist. There's strike one and you're out. And I can't see my team throwing away two or three draft picks when I think with this roster that we have, we're closer to being successful than a lot of people think. I can't see throwing that those picks away on a question mark off the field. Whereas Mariota, I don't think he's ready to step in and do what Drew Brees does right now. But I would be more in favor of not throwing the form to get him. But if he would, for some reason, fall to 7, 8, 9, I would be willing to try to move up for him and let him sit, because I think with Peyton's offensive mind that he could come up with a successful way to use Mariota. But I think what pretty much all of us are saying is that when you look at him strictly on the field, Jameis Winston might be the best quarterback prospect to come out of college since Andrew Luck. But NFL teams can't just go by that anymore. And all of us are saying we'd be more willing to have Mariota and try to build him up coaching-wise than to deal with a successful guy like Winston who just can't seem to keep himself out of trouble off the field.
Tell you what, if I'm Jameis Winston, I'm going and finding Johnny Manziel right now and punching him square in the face. At this point, everyone's pegged Jameis as he's this Johnny Manziel clone. Now, granted, Jameis Winston has done some boneheaded things off the field, crab legs and just yelling stuff, and it's ridiculous. But it's not the constant partying, clubbing, getting in trouble that Jameis Winston is not going to be in rehab anytime soon. And I'm going to take you to task, Pod, on a couple things you said about Jameis. Now, I'm a Florida State guy. I've been watching Jameis Winston since he tore up the Elite 11 back in 2011. Unfortunately, I can't remember which way he was wearing his hat at that time. But but Jameis, you talked about Jameis having – or talking about Mariota having success at the college level. Jameis won the national championship and a Heisman as a freshman. You can't be more successful than that. And then he led his team right back to the playoff in his sophomore season. And in terms of his leap, the biggest misconception I've heard about Jameis Winston is that he is not a good leader. When he's in that locker room, he is about as good a leader on the college level as some guys ever saw. There was a reason that they constantly came in down at the half and were coming back on teams week after week after week. Now, granted, some of the reasons they were down at the half was because he made some poor choices and tried to force the ball a couple places he shouldn't have, and his interception total was higher than you would like it. But I think his leadership in that locker room among those guys is going to be a very underrated quality of his. I think Winston, he's not going to struggle because of off-the-field issues like that. He's got the intangibles that he needs. Now, Mariota, the scenario I want to see for Marcus Mariota, I don't think he's ready to play right away. And unfortunately, we're in a culture where if you spend a first-round pick on a quarterback, they got to be out on that field year one. And I would like to see Mariota sit for a year, develop. I think the team that should go after him is the St. Louis Rams. I think they need to go to Washington and say, hey, remember that trade where you got your quote-unquote franchise quarterback? Why don't you do a solid for us? They move up ahead of the Jet, take him at 5, sit for a year, let Nick Foles do his thing. He didn't have to be the good. That's a talented roster they have down there, a talented young roster. Let him sit, let him develop. When he's ready, you integrate him into that offense. I think that right there would be the perfect fit for Marcus Mariota, and that would let him be the most successful.
I agree with you. That's why I stated that if he would fall to 6, 7, 8, or 9, I would be willing to go up and get him, because I don't think there's any way that the St. Louis Rams don't take him at 10 if he's there.
And so many things. So many things to react to on this. First of all, you're right. I might be being a little harsh on Jameis Winston. The thing is if he could just live in the locker room, that'd be fantastic. The problem is when he's in the student union, that's where he is. He's not in the locker room. He's in the student union making a, you know, out of himself. It's just not very good. Second, we talked about how he could be, when we look at this quarterback, he has everything you need to be an NFL quarterback on the field. And I'm reminded of an interview we did on the Football Today podcast at ESPN with Tom Martinez, Tom Brady's former quarterback coach. He unfortunately passed away at a way too early an age. But he talked about Jamarcus Russell and said Jamarcus Russell was one of the most talented quarterbacks he ever had the privilege of working with. The problem was Jamarcus just didn't want to put in the time. And if he had put in the time, he could have been one of the greatest quarterbacks we had ever seen play in the NFL. And we all know what we saw from Jamarcus Russell was not that of one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen play in the NFL. So that's where I caution with Jameis Winston. I'm making that comparison, whether it be fair or unfair. But at this point, there's just too many things that we've heard off the field with Jameis Winston that would make me shy away. The other thing that I'm hearing from a couple of you guys, and it's blowing my mind from a fan standpoint, is you're willing to mortgage your future in NFL draft picks to move up to get a guy that you have to wait for the future on. In the first round, even. To me, in the first round, you have to get an impact player right away. That is the whole point of the first round, is you need a guy that's going to come on the field and he's going to contribute day one to your team. You cannot trade draft picks and move up to get a guy who's going to sit on your bench and learn, no matter how good that's going to be for him, no matter how good it's ultimately going to be for your team in the future. You can't mortgage the future for the future. You can only mortgage the future for the now.
Well, I think from a Saints point of view, Pod, is that a lot of people are wondering if this isn't going to be Breeze's last year here with this contract situation. We cleared up a good bit of future cap space with the Jimmy Graham, Ben Grimes moves, and that should get us out of cap hell for now. But I'm not talking about throwing away a draft like we did for Ricky Williams back in the day. I'm talking the move up from 13 to 9 or 10. We have 5 draft picks in the first 78 picks of the draft. I think we could do it and still manage to get out 2 or 3 impact players out of those 5 picks. And even to just sit behind Drew Brees for a year and learn, I think I'd be willing to throw away a third-round pick to move up 2 or 3 spots to grab him if the opportunity arose.
So as we're talking about trading draft picks for a quarterback who may or may not sit for your team and may or may not wear his hat forwards or backwards, there is a quarterback out there that Andrew wants to talk about who seems to be a little unsettled about his team's home base situation. Does Philip Rivers wear his hat forwards or backwards? Does anybody know?
I'm blinded by the bolo tie.
Bolo.
North of that.
Yeah.
Philip Rivers is in the last year of his contract and has said that he is not going to renegotiate that contract until the end of the year. Andrew, you know more about this. Why don't you fill us in on the details here?
So Philip Rivers came out and said that he's not going to re-sign. I probably just said he's not going to re-sign this year because he doesn't know what the situation is with San Diego, the Chargers possibly moving to Los Angeles. Apparently, Philip Rivers is an L.A. type of guy and doesn't want to live there. I mean, looking outside my window right now, I'd love to be in Los Angeles, so I don't know what he's thinking. but apparently, he loves it in San Diego. I mean, who wouldn't? But San Diego and L.A. aren't that far away from each other, so I don't see what's going on. I think an interesting question is if you're a team like the Jets, would you give up your first-round pick to get a guy like Philip Rivers, a sure top 10, top 12 quarterback in the league who you could win a Super Bowl with, if you would give up that pick? Because the Jets didn't mortgage their future, but they spent a lot of money this offseason to build around the quarterback position. And if a guy like Philip Rivers is available, I think you have to go after him because there's a short shelf life in the NFL for as an executive, as a coach. And if you could get a guy like that and win a Super Bowl, I think you go out and do it.
If Philip Rivers is an LA guy, I wonder if he's a New York guy.
Exactly.
That said, That said, Philip Rivers on the New York Jets, I crown them. I will crown the New York Jets. They land Philip Rivers.
I don't like this reverse jinx thing going on right now, this whole podcast. There's been way too much Jets love from you, Pod.
Listen, they had a good offseason. What can I say? I mean, Ryan, you've got your quarterback of the future, but what do you think about Philip Rivers?
Yeah, well, I think he's pretty underrated personally, and I think he was one of the elite quarterbacks, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago, and then he had a weird 2-year stretch where he couldn't do anything, and it was just, I thought maybe that was the end for him, and then I think the last 2 years he's really come back on. So I would say if you're the New York Jets and you can get Philip Rivers, yes, do it. Take your number 6 overall pick. I mean, I think, you know, I'd have to look at more trades and history and stuff like that. But Sam Bradford was just traded, and I know it wasn't a first-round pick, but it was a lot of stuff. One thing about this whole story, though, is that I'm almost just not buying it. And I don't know if Rivers is really going to be available just because
he's playing out. Is that because it's your team that's moving to Los Angeles?
Oh, there we go. I knew this was going to come up at some point. I want to defend the Jacksonville Jaguars. They are not moving. I'm so glad they're out of this L.A. talk. It's pretty much what Chargers, Raiders, and Rams now. Honestly, when we got the new owner, Shad Khan, I was like, I was kind of scared, and I thought that might be it, that he might be the guy who's moving the team. But he built, you know, the two biggest video boards in the world are at the stadium and swimming pools, and he's got another shipyards project that may or may not happen. I won't get into, but they're staying put. Thank you very much. They'll be in northern Florida in Duval County, and I don't think we have to worry about that. But back to Rivers, I just wouldn't think he would move, and I don't think I don't feel like the city would be that big a deal, and maybe he's just trying to, you know, be there for the San Diego fans and try to keep the team there, saying, you know, if we move to LA, I'm not even going to go, and maybe San Diego keeps their team. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't think Rivers really has a ton of leverage in this situation. I'm not buying this one either. Because even if he doesn't want to sign a contract, the Chargers can franchise him next year and keep him on the roster. And after 2016, he'll be 35. I'm not quite sure what team is going to be interested in making a move at that point. So, again, this seems more PR to me than anything else. Rivers putting on that good face, doing it for the San Diego fans. I get that. I don't know how realistic a move is of him moving to any other team.
Chase, how about you swap quarterbacks, send Drew back to San Diego?
I think we got the good guy out of that deal, Pod. We got a nice shiny ring to show off.
Plus, I would think, you know, you were talking earlier about Drew Brees and the worry that it's his last year. I mean, Tom Brady has done a lot in Boston to sort of integrate himself with that city. I think Drew Brees and the whole situation with Katrina, like Drew Brees in New Orleans, like I cannot see that divorce happening. And if it does, it's going to be so, so ugly for the New Orleans Saints.
Believe me, Fod, I'm not in favor of that. I want the guy to retire and become the mayor of Louisiana. I'm sorry, governor of Louisiana, because there's no in the state that would beat him. He is a hero of the highest order around here. And it's not just on the field. It's community stuff that he's done. He's been nothing short of amazing. And I think that's more of a national media kind of thing. I'm with you. I would think there would be an uprising in New Orleans the day that we get rid of him. And I think the talk came mostly from the salary cap situation. And it does sting when you see Tom Brady extending his deal year after year to open up more cap space for the Patriots. But the thing a lot of people don't understand is the restructure that a lot of people have been calling for, that wouldn't help us in the long term. That would just make it even more difficult for us to get out of cap hell when he does leave, hopefully 3 or 4 years from now. I wouldn't be surprised. Next season is his last season under this contract. I wouldn't be surprised if after the season we start reaching out about an extension with him. At least that's what I would hope for. I mean, him and Sean Payton have this relationship that you don't see many quarterbacks and head coaches have in the league. I mean, you know, Pod, with Brady and Belichick, they're tied at the hip from now through the end of history. And that's how it is with the Saints right now. I mean, you look at pre-2006 and post-2006, and the work that these two guys have done with this team and this city are nothing short of amazing.
Yeah, I can't imagine the divorce that would happen in New Orleans when Drew Brees either says goodbye or is forced to say goodbye. If he's forced to say goodbye, it's obviously going to be really messy. When he decides it's time to say goodbye, it's going to be an interesting time for New Orleans, to say the least. Because, I mean, that man has certainly done quite a bit for that community, and you know. I can definitely see him running for governor of Louisiana. I could see somebody getting their talons in him and saying, "Hey, we need you to stick around for a while."
He would have no trouble winning office.
So that's going to do it, guys. I think it's been another great episode of Next Fan Up. Remember, folks, we want you to interact with us. We're by the fans for the fans. We're here for you, so we want to hear from you. Send us your emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can interact with us on Twitter. The podcast Twitter account is @NFUpodcast. Brian, what's your Twitter?
Sharpshot3ball.
Excellent. Chase, what do you got for Twitter?
I am @WhoDatSaintFan.
Andrew, what do you got?
I'm @ClocksHersh, ClocksHersh, HERSH.
And Ryan, your Twitter?
RyanM_DrHands.
Wow, I think we would go long if I started asking where you came up with that. Don't forget to check out your favorite team's off-season write-ups on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast, or if you just search Next Fan Up on Facebook, you'll be able to find our Facebook group. And, of course, you can listen to this show, blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. And we are now on iTunes. So you can subscribe on iTunes, download and listen there, leave a review. That would be fantastic. I am, of course, Pod Vader, @TheRealPodVader on Twitter. So you can check out what I got going on there. And, hey, we've got plenty of sports stuff here at Blog Talk Radio. It's fantasy baseball season. Might want to check out a couple of our fantasy shows. The Fantasy Insiders is a great one. We also have a show that was nominated for the podcast awards in the sports section. They're not going to win because my former show is still going to win. And yes, I will claim credit to that trophy as well. Don't forget, we'll have another show again midweek. Our midweek shows tend to be focused on one particular division. At this point in time, I'm not sure exactly which division is up next, but you'll have a division preview coming up midweek. And of course, I'll be back again on Saturday with another group of super fans, and we'll be chatting it up all about the NFL. It's everybody's favorite sport. It's clear that while the Cowboys may not be America's team anymore, football is America's game. Like how I threw a shot there at you, Brian?
Why you gotta do me like that at the end? That's messed up.
Listen, I was taking shots at almost everybody today. It felt like I left you out. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, not keep it all. Wanted
Cowboys
to keep it all
used to getting shots at him.
By the way, I am wearing my hat forward today.
Good.
It's a Boston Red Sox hat, so I'm happy to lead the show. And with that, folks, I think I can say there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.
I I think the last couple of years we've seen the maturation process of Tony Romo. He no longer wears the backwards hat on the sideline. He's got the hat going forward, and that's, I don't know why that's a big thing, but that's a big thing